York, this is Democracy Now!
Like the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs, we are having an outsized impact. In the case of climate, we are not the dinosaurs. We are the meteor. We are not only in danger, we are the danger.
Deadly heat. As we enter the month of June, record scorching temperatures are already taking hold around the world, from California to Texas, Mexico to India. We'll speak with a climate scientist in the Yucatan, where it's so hot in Mexico, howler monkeys are falling dead from the trees. And we'll talk to a climate reporter about the heat wave scenario that keeps climate scientists up at night. Then, Israel illegally drops white phosphorus on residential areas in southern Lebanon. We'll go to Beirut to speak with Human Rights Watch. Then, black women's voices are the focus of a project from V-Day, the global activist movement to end violence against all women, gender expansive people, girls, and the earth. It's called Voices, a sacred sisterscape.
You are the sun. Where are you running to? Mother asked, deeply concerned as we darted to hide under the shade. A shield from the sun? The cracks on our skin, she said, are a celebration of life.
We'll speak with Grammy-nominated poet, Voices director Aja Monet, and playwright V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel struck another UN school in Gaza where displaced Palestinians had sought shelter. Al Jazeera reports several people were killed in today's attack on the UNRWA school in the Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. This comes a day after an Israeli strike on a UN school in the Nusayrat refugee camp killed at least 40 Palestinians. Video footage has confirmed U.S. munitions were used in Thursday's strike. The New York Times reports remnants of the Boeing-made GBU-39 bomb were uncovered. Al Jazeera also published photographs of a missile fragment made by Honeywell. The UN school had been turned into a shelter for displaced Palestinians. At least 14 children were reportedly killed in Thursday's attack. A number of other children were injured, including Imad al-Makadmeh, who spoke to a reporter as he lay on the floor of Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah.
Why did they bomb us? Why? I want to know why. Why? We are all children in the school. There are no armed people. I don't know why they bombed it. Where should we go? Where? Where should we go? Here or there?
Israel claims Thursday's strike on the UN school targeted Hamas militants, but Israel's presented no evidence to back up the claim. In other news, the UN's warning of a possible cholera outbreak in Gaza this summer due to a severe lack of clean water. In Washington, D.C., congressional leaders have confirmed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will address a joint session of Congress July 24th. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, along with Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell and House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, joined together to invite Netanyahu. In a letter, they wrote, quote, "We invite you to share the Israeli government's vision for defending democracy, combating terror, and establishing a just and lasting peace in the region," unquote. The invitation comes just weeks after the head prosecutor at the International Criminal Court, Karim Khan, announced he's seeking an arrest warrant for Netanyahu for committing war crimes. A number of lawmakers have vowed to boycott the speech, including independent Senator Bernie Sanders. In related news, CNN is reporting the CIA has circulated a new assessment that concludes Netanyahu will likely defy pressure from the Biden administration to end the war on Gaza and set a post-war plan. This comes as the Israeli military has announced it signed a $3 billion deal with the United States to buy 25 F-35 stealth fighter jets built by Lockheed Martin. Israeli officials say the warplanes will be financed by U.S. military aid to Israel. This comes despite growing calls for the U.S. to cut off arms sales to Israel. On Thursday, the NAACP called on President Biden to draw a red line and halt arms shipments to Israel, citing the mounting death toll in Gaza, where over 36,700 Palestinians have been killed in the past 8 months. This is NAACP CEO Derek Johnson.
We witnessed individuals in Gaza who are civilians being attacked, and they went to what was supposed to be the safe zones. These are things that are avoidable. The United States must take a moral stand to protect civilian innocent children and lives.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed 3 Palestinians and wounded at least 13 in a raid on the city of Jenin on Thursday. The group Defense for Children International reports the dead included a 16-year-old named Issa Nafez Musa Jalad, who sustained gunshot wounds to his leg, back, and back of the head. The Biden administration's announced it'll send another $225 million in military aid to Ukraine, including munitions that could be used to strike targets inside Russia. Earlier today, President Biden met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Paris and apologized for the months-long holdup in new U.S. assistance for Ukraine. On Thursday, President Biden spoke about Ukraine during a speech in Normandy, France, to mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day, when 150,000 Allied soldiers invaded France to drive out the Nazis.
And make no mistake, the autocrats of the world are watching closely to see what happens in Ukraine, to see if we let this illegal aggression go unchecked. We cannot let that happen. To surrender to bullies, to bow down to dictators, is simply unthinkable.
In related news, Russian President Vladimir Putin's threatening to send long-range missiles to allies of Moscow that could be used against nations sending similar weapons to Ukraine.
We think that if someone thinks it is possible to supply such weapons to a combat zone to strike at our territory and create problems for us, why do we not have the right to supply our weapons of the same class to those regions of the world where there will be strikes on the sensitive facilities of those countries that are doing this against Russia?
In a major legal victory for Donald Trump, an appeals court in Georgia's indefinitely paused the election subversion conspiracy case against the former president. The decision means the trial, if it even happens, will likely be delayed until after the election. The appeals court put the case on hold as judges review a lower court's decision not to disqualify Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis. A federal judge has ordered former Trump advisor Steve Bannon to report to prison July 1st to serve a 4-month sentence for contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with a subpoena issued by the House January 6 committee. In Sudan, over 100 people, including dozens of children, were killed after Rapid Support Forces fighters stormed a village in the Al Jazeera state Wednesday, indiscriminately firing at civilians. Survivors of the massacre described the carnage, saying over 40 armed RSF vehicles raided the village of Wad al-Nur, unleashing heavy weaponry. The RSF has claimed it was targeting the Sudanese army, but village residents say there's no military presence in the region. The UN's condemned the attack, while the International Organization for Migration warns the number of displaced people over the intensifying conflict in Sudan could soon reach 10 million. This comes as the European Union's expected to impose sanctions on 6 members of the Sudanese military and the RSF over accusations of war crimes, as both sides fight for control of Sudan's Darfur region. In South Korea, thousands of workers at Samsung Electronics went on strike today for the first time in the company's history. Some 28,000 union members have joined the one-day action. That's nearly a quarter of Samsung's entire workforce in South Korea. They're demanding salary increases and bonuses as Samsung, which produces smartphones, electronics, and memory chips, has reported billions of dollars in profits. This is Samsung workers union leader Son Woo-mak.
We're approaching the fifth year since the labor union was founded, but the management still refuses to recognize the union and continues to neglect it, ignoring the voices of the employees or the labor union without any communication.
New York Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul's facing growing criticism after she abruptly halted a plan to charge drivers $15 to enter parts of Manhattan. Up until this week, Hochul had advocated for congestion pricing as a way to raise money for public transit and to reduce car emissions in the city. Climate advocate Bill McKibben described Hochul's abandonment of the program as one of the most aggressive anti-environmental actions ever undertaken by a Democratic governor. In media news, the Washington-based news outlet The Hill has fired Breonna Joy Gray, the co-host of Rising, The Hill's daily morning show. Gray's been a vocal critic of Israel's war on Gaza. Last year, The Hill also fired the political commentator Katie Halper after she called Israel an apartheid state. And the Columbia Law Review website is back online after its board of directors took down the site Monday when student editors refused a request from the board to halt the publication of an academic legal article written by Palestinian human rights lawyer Rabia Akbaria, titled Toward Nakba as a Legal State. But the controversy has not ended. Student editors at the Law Review have voted to go on strike after the board added a disclaimer statement about the Nakba article on the review's website. Visit democracynow.org to see our interview with Rabea Ekbarea. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have illegally dropped white phosphorus munitions on densely populated residential areas in southern Lebanon, forcing many residents to flee. That's according to a new report by Human Rights Watch documenting Israel's use of the chemical in at least 17 municipalities across southern Lebanon since October, including five towns where the shells struck several residential buildings. White phosphorus poses a high risk of excruciating burns and lifelong suffering, and its use as an incendiary weapon in civilian areas is a war crime, which under U.S. law should have implications for continuous military aid to Israel. The Intercept's Ryan Grimm questioned State Department spokesperson Matt Miller Thursday about the Human Rights Watch report.
We've seen tons of reports now about the use of white phosphorus by the IDF, 17 municipalities across southern Lebanon since October, according to HRW. So does the U.S. have any policy that it, with regard to the use of white phosphorus?
So
setting aside whether or not these individual incidents occurred.
Yeah. So white phosphorus is something that's commonly used in military operations to produce smoke, to obscure ground forces, mark locations, or provide illumination. And just the usage by itself is not something that's prohibited under international humanitarian law. But as with any type of military operation, civilians can't be targeted. If white phosphorus is used, precautions have to be taken to minimize harm to civilians, and it's incumbent on countries to use white phosphorus in ways that are consistent with their national humanitarian law.
Are these incidents concerning that Human Rights Watch is saying that they were outside the bounds of...
So I've seen the reports, but that is the type of thing that we'd have to take a look at and assess before commenting in detail.
That was State Department spokesperson Matt Miller being questioned by The Intercept's Ryan Grimm. After one Israeli attack on October 15th, at least two people from the village of Bustan had to be rushed to the hospital after inhaling white phosphorus smoke. Lebanon's Ministry of Public Health says at least 173 people have been injured in the white phosphorus attacks, which have also caused hundreds of forest fires in Lebanon. For more, we go to Beirut, where we're joined by Ramzi Kais, a researcher in the Middle East and North Africa Division at Human Rights Watch, investigating human rights abuses in Lebanon, lead author of the group's new report called Lebanon, Israel's White Phosphorus Use Risks Civilian Harm. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Ramzi. Just lay out what you understand is happening in southern Lebanon right now when it comes to the use of Israeli military use of white phosphorus.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you for having me. As you noted, we released a report today documenting Israel's widespread use of white phosphorus in South Lebanon. And what we found is that this widespread use is putting civilians at grave risk and also contributing to displacement. As part of our research, our arms experts and digital investigations team reviewed over 100 photos and videos and identified the use of white phosphorus munitions in 47 of them. And when possible, we geolocated precisely identified where those munitions had fell. In total, we found that white phosphorus was used in at least 17 municipalities, stretching from southwest Lebanon near the Mediterranean all the way to the southeast near the occupied Golan Heights. And in five of those municipalities, we identified the use of white phosphorus munitions over populated residential areas. As part of the research, we spoke to eight residents from the south, including the mayors of three of the towns where white phosphorus was unlawfully used. And what they told us was, you know, at the time of the attacks, many of these villages were still populated, people in them. In the case of Al Bustan, which you had mentioned, the mayor said that, you know, nearly all the village was still there. When the attacks happened, two people were injured. In a separate town in Kfarkila, the mayor told us that overall between 20 to 25 people had been injured from white phosphorus use. And all the mayors that we spoke to had said that it, you know, turned the towns into a militarized zone and pushed people out of their villages. As you noted, the Ministry of Health had said that, you know, at least 173 people as of May 28 have been injured as a result of exposure to white phosphorus. And we heard just about the fears that people have from its use in the south. We think that the widespread use of white phosphorus in South Lebanon, you know, that there should be action taken. On the one hand, Israel should immediately prohibit the use of airburst white phosphorus munitions in populated areas because of the risk of indiscriminate attacks on civilians and the harm that we're seeing being caused to civilians. Also, you know, the widespread use shows that there's a need for stronger international law on the use of white phosphorus, and I'm happy to speak more on that. And we also made a call to the Lebanese government to file a declaration with the International Criminal Court, giving it the jurisdiction to prosecute and investigate crimes committed within its jurisdiction since October 7. The government made a decision on this about a month ago, but then backtracked on it, unfortunately.
So explain exactly international law when it comes to the use of white phosphorus, if you can go into that in more detail. And also, what about U.S. law?
Sure. Let me just start by saying that with white phosphorus, you know, it's a chemical substance that's dispersed in artillery fire, shells, bombs, and rockets, and it has incendiary effects, as you had mentioned, that can cause death or lifelong sufferings. It can set homes and agricultural areas and other civilian objects on fire, and, you know, it continues burning until either it's cut off from oxygen or the white phosphorus is depleted. So when it comes to contact with people, it can burn down to the bone and cause lifelong suffering. Now, it can also be used as a military tool, you know, to create smoke screens, to obscure the movement of troops, or to mark or signal a certain area. And it also interferes with infrared systems and weapon tracking systems. But under international humanitarian law, the use of airburst white phosphorus is unlawfully indiscriminate in populated areas and also does not meet the legal requirement to take all necessary precautions to avoid civilian harms. And these concerns are you know, amplified given the way in which we're seeing white phosphorus used, particularly in South Lebanon and in Gaza, where it's airburst over a certain area. And when that happens, the 116 felt wedges impregnated with white phosphorus can spread over an area of 125 meters to 250 meters, depending on the height and angle of burst, and indiscriminately cause harm to civilians and civilian objects in that area. And so, with regards to international law, when it's used as a weapon, white phosphorus is considered an incendiary weapon. And now, incendiary weapons are not explicitly banned under international humanitarian law, but customary international humanitarian law maintains that all parties to a conflict need to take all feasible precautions caused by these weapons. The only legally binding instrument with regards to incendiary weapon is Protocol 3 of the Convention on Conventional Weapons. Lebanon is a state party, Israel is not, but the Protocol 3 has two significant loopholes. On the one hand, it defines incendiary weapons as weapons that are primarily designed to set fires or cause burns, whereas, so therefore it excludes multipurpose munitions like white phosphorus. And also it has much weaker language on the use of ground-launched incendiary weapons. So what we're saying in Gaza and Lebanon, where it's artillery-fired projectiles, they're ground-launched and then they're airbursts of an area. And so this is why we have long called for the closing of these loopholes and for stronger international law on the use of incendiary weapons.
I wanted to go back to what Human Rights Watch confirmed in Gaza. In October, it reports that it had confirmed Israel firing white phosphorus munitions during attacks on Gaza, as well as along its border with Lebanon. Israel denied using white phosphorus, but previously had used the white phosphorus in attacks on the Gaza Strip, including in 2009. Israel's military initially said it was currently not aware of the use of weapons containing white phosphorus in Gaza. Later, it said, quote, "The current accusation regarding the use of white phosphorus in Gaza is unequivocally false." Meanwhile, the new Human Rights Watch report on Lebanon also notes the Israeli military said its main smoke shells do not contain white phosphorus, but stated that similar to many Western armies, the IDF also has smoke shells that contain white phosphorus, and the choice to use them is influenced by operational considerations and availability compared to alternatives, unquote. The military further said that such munitions are intended for smoke screens and not for an attack or ignition, the report said. Can you explain all of this, Ramzi Qais?
Sure. I'll just start off by saying that, you know, Human Rights Watch documented the use of white phosphorus back in 2009 in Gaza, and then subsequently since October until today. We first documented it in October in South Lebanon and in Gaza. And then subsequently after that report, the Israeli military or the spokesperson denied, the military using white phosphorus. But after that, several other rights groups, including Amnesty International, for example, documented the use of white phosphorus unlawfully in the southern Lebanese town of Taira. Washington Post then did an investigation and found that the Israeli military used U.S. weapons in an attack that Amnesty said should be investigated as a war crime. In response to this, the statement that you just mentioned came from the Israeli military, where they said, you know, that some of the smoke shells have white phosphorus and they're used to create smoke screens, and that, you know, their use of white phosphorus complies and goes beyond the requirements of international law. What our report, I think, shows is, in fact, that, you know, it's being used unlawfully. It's being used on residential populated areas. It's causing harm to civilians, and it's causing displacement in the south.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us from Beirut. Ramzi Qais, Human Rights Watch researcher investigating human rights abuses in Lebanon, lead author of the new report from HRW, Lebanon, Israel's White Phosphorus Use Risks Civilian Harm. This final description of the effects of white phosphorus from the Human Rights Watch report, while white phosphorus that contacts people can burn down to the bone. Fragments of white phosphorus can exacerbate wounds even after treatment and can enter the bloodstream and cause multiple organ failures. Already dressed wounds can reignite when dressings are removed and the wounds are re-exposed to oxygen. Even relatively minor burns are often fatal. For survivors, extensive scarring tightens muscle tissue and creates physical disabilities. The trauma of the attack, the painful treatment that follows, and appearance-changing scars lead to psychological harm and social exclusion. Next up, deadly heat. As we enter this month, record scorching temperatures across the globe. We'll speak with a climate scientist in Mexico. Howler monkeys are falling from the trees. We'll also talk to a climate reporter about the heat wave scenario that keeps climate scientists up at night. Back in 20 seconds.
It's only 4 degrees. 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 It's only 4 degrees.
Giuliani. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Deadly heat. As we enter the month of June, scorching temperatures are already gripping parts of Arizona, California, Nevada, as well as countries around the world. In Arizona, extreme heat sent 11 people to the hospital as thousands waited to enter a campaign rally with Donald Trump. In India, 33 poll workers died from heat stroke on a single day last week during India's national elections. In Mexico, it's so hot, howler monkeys are falling dead. From the term last month was the hottest May on record, putting the earth on a 12-month streak of record scorching and breaking temperatures. Meanwhile, a new report has found the rate Earth is warming hit an all-time high last year, with 92% of 2023 record heat caused by humans. On Wednesday, the World Meteorological Organization announced there's an 80% chance the average global temperature will exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels for at least one of the next 5 years. On the same day that report was released, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres gave a major speech on the climate crisis, right next to the dinosaurs at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York City. The UN Secretary General said the world can still meet the 1.5 degrees target if governments drastically speed up the phase out of fossil fuels.
Today is World Environment Day. It is also the day that the European Commission's Copernicus Climate Change Service officially reports May 2024 as the hottest May in recorded history. This marks 12 straight months of the hottest months ever. For the past year, every turn of the calendar has turned up the heat. Our planet is trying to tell us something, but we don't seem to be listening. Dear friends, the American Museum of Natural History is the ideal place to make the point. This great museum tells the amazing story of our natural world, of the vast forces that have shaped life on Earth over billions of years. And humanity is just one small blip on the radar. But like the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs, we are having an outsized impact. In the case of climate, we are not the dinosaurs, we are the meteor. We are not only in danger, we are the danger, but we are also the solution. So, dear friends, we are at a moment of truth. The truth is, almost 10 years since the Paris Agreement was adopted, the target of limiting long-term global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius is hanging by a thread. The truth is, the world is spewing emissions so fast that by 2030, a far higher temperature rise would be all but guaranteed.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in a major address on the climate crisis Wednesday to mark World Environment Day. Again, he was speaking at the Museum of Natural History here in New York. For more on deadly heat and the climate crisis, we're joined by two guests. Dr. Ruth Sadeh-Somota is a researcher at the Institute of Engineering at UNAM, the National Autonomous University of Mexico. She is joining us from the city of Mérida, in the Mexican state of Yucatan. And joining us from North Carolina, Jeff Goodell. He's covered the climate crisis for over 20 years at Rolling Stone magazine, the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Heat Will Kill You First, Life and Death on a Scorched Planet. He's got a new op-ed in the New York Times, The Heat Wave Scenario That Keeps Climate Scientists Up at Night. What is that scenario, Jeff?
Well, that scenario is a look at what would happen if there were a five-day blackout during an extreme heat wave, looking at the kind of cascading consequences of these two events together. It was based on a study done by some researchers at Georgia Tech and Arizona State University. And it looked at, you know, We think of air conditioning as this sort of techno fix for ex-